Hello and welcome to the RTE Rugby Podcast. I'm Michael Glennon, sitting in for Neil Tracy again this week. On the panel today, we have Hannah O'Connor, former Ireland and Leinster forward, and Johnny Holland, former Munster out half. How are you doing this morning, guys?
All good, mate.
I guess we've only one real topic of discussion, and that's the Women's World Cup, which will start on Friday week. It's England against the USA, kicking off proceedings there in the Stadium of Light in Sunderland. 2 days later, Ireland will start their Pool C campaign against Japan in Northampton's Franklin's Gardens. That's followed for Ireland a week later by Spain at the same venue. And then the final Pool C game for Ireland will be against New Zealand, back-to-back winners in Brighton. Ireland have had two World Cup warm-up games. They beat Scotland in Cork a couple of weeks ago and lost quite heavily to Canada. Despite the scoreline was closer at the end than it could have been, it was a heavy defeat for Ireland. And we're going to look back on that. The World Cup squad has been announced, 32-player squad announced by Scott Beaman on Monday. And we'll just check in on that to see, you know, what are the main talking points from that. Before I get into that, I might just ask the two of you, starting with you, Hannah, where this World Cup is sitting in the Irish sporting landscape. So Ireland, obviously, hosted it 8 years ago, didn't qualify last year or the last edition. Where, if we're hanging around in rugby circles, I guess we expect people to know or be up to speed with where the team are, what's happening. When you're talking to the general public or just general sports fans, where do you see it landing? Where is it on the scale from in the last couple of weeks in your experience?
Yeah, I think it's definitely been pushed to the fore of kind of sports in Ireland, not just in rugby circles. I suppose, obviously, I'm in and around the rugby circles and everybody is going to it or planning their kind of weekends over the next foreseeable kind of August and September about kind of making their way over, such as the accessibility to it, which is great. I think the women's game over the last couple of years, for what they've done and what they've achieved, from, you know, beating New Zealand in WXV1s last year to kind of the two kind of successful, you know, Six Nations campaigns they've had, I think that kind of puts it to the forefront of people's mind. The brand of rugby, the style of rugby that they're playing, is much more attractive kind of style that we've had in the past. And you can see the talent coming through in the younger players that are exciting to watch, along the likes of, you know, Aoife Wafer, obviously being talked about in kind of the global circles, but there's a few other players in that kind of category with it as well. So I definitely think it's definitely in the Irish people's kind of circles, of not just the rugby circles. It's a World Cup at the end of the day, and you'd like to think that people will kind of get on that green wave and support the girls, whether it's traveling over or kind of just engaging in the publicity around it as well to get the hype going for it. I think that's in a pretty good place.
What about you, Johnny? What's your experience? How much on the radar is this tournament from speaking to the general people who are not involved in fully?
Yeah, like, I think it's funny because, you know, we're obviously, rugby for us is in two different places, like, isn't it, in terms of the circles that we're in, and the men's game kind of overshadows a lot, unfortunately. Like, the Lions, I think, was poor timing for the Women's World Cup, but now that it's over, you can see, even the announcement the last time, I think, was very well received. The team announcement was class, like, you know, and the timing of it is very good. You know, there's a lull around the men's game, which is excellent. Not that you need a lull, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it's pre-season, it's great timing for the women just to get to the forefront of everything, because I think if the season, you know, parachuted ahead all of a sudden, like, you get a divide of where people watch the rugby. Like, even the under 20 championship around the summertime, it's hard to watch everything, like, you know what I mean? Like, I couldn't see a lot of that under 20 championship with the Lions and with our own summertime going on. So I think the timing of it is brilliant. And I think there's a lot of people supporting. And I think, as Hannah said, the way the team has kind of shaped up in the last couple of years and evolved, because, you know, the talent is coming through. The youngsters are definitely coming through. But I think even the sevens talent returning, I think all that helps. Like, when you get some of your top players coming back into the team, the style of rugby, as Hannah said, definitely becomes more attractive. But because you can execute, like, if you look at Stacey Flood at full back, slinging passes, it's passes that you think she shouldn't get away around contact, then she finds some elbow over something and she's getting a pass away. It's just absolutely class. And then you see McGann and Parsons getting in the corner as a result of that. But if you don't get that pass away, it's just another phase, you know. So I think, like, you know, I coached with Dennis Fogarty, and I would have asked him a lot around what's going on in the camp at various times. Like, not that he's going to be telling me the inner workings of it, but he would have said that, you know, Scott Beaman is, I've kind of mentioned it in my column, I didn't want to really kind of put him in it, but he would have just said how high a standard he holds the group in, like, in, you know, more meetings, more training, more everything, like, and we've seen that in the men's game in the past. But I think the the girls team at the moment, they just need that. You know, they need that structure, they need that kind of backing, they need that seriousness because they're that good. You know what I mean? They need to have that seriousness from the game. So I think getting those structures in has really helped. But as I said, some players returning, the quality coming back, the quality coming through is actually in a really good place. So I actually think the trajectory of it has gone in a really good way. Beating New Zealand in the competition last year, all those things are adding up to build some expectation, isn't it? And expectation is tough, but I think it's a good thing to have that behind you now.
Absolutely. And even with the split season in GAA, like now this window is open because previously this would be consumed with All Ireland finals over the next while. So it's really they've a good window and a good opportunity to build on that.
Can I jump in on that? Because I don't want it to come across that like there needs to be a gap for the women's rugby tournament to really
But it
come.
doesn't hurt.
It
And
doesn't hurt at all, but I do think like you know it gives people a chance to really get behind it. I think we should do that. It's fair, it's right, and I think the team deserves that as well. Do you know what I mean? So it doesn't need that gap, but it certainly helps.
very good. And Ireland beat Scotland in their opening World Cup warm-up game. I was up in Belfast on last Saturday for the Canada match. Canada ranked number two in the world. We kind of knew what challenge they would bring. They really brought it. They were really up for it. Ireland had made 10 changes. So there was a kind of an element of rustiness there. The story of the game was Canada scored five first half tries. Ireland scored one. It was 33-7. Canada scored first at the start of the second half, even though Ireland had, maybe 10 minutes pressure, it ran out 47
26.
27-26 to Canada. There's a question I asked Scott after the match in terms, Hannah, of when you bring in 10 players who hadn't played in a while, how much of the very poor, let's be honest, very poor first half performance, lots of missed tackles, poor discipline, wayward kicking, how much of that do you put down to rustiness? Versus how much is not really acceptable 2 weeks out from a Rugby World Cup.
Yeah, I think obviously the kind of the line that will be given is kind of that rustiness of the 10 players swapping in, but ultimately those 10 players swapping in are probably more in line with what Scott will be picking for a start. You'd imagine what he'd start to pick as his starting 15 against Japan. So they will have it down as kind of unacceptable. As you said, the errors that were there were more errors in like, missed tackles, people not folding or they're being stretched in the width. Like a lot of it looked like, that we were narrowed up. But if you kind of come it back and bring it back, it's starting, as you said, from like those errors that, soaking pressure, and then unfortunately Dana missing a kick for touch to bring pressure right back, and all of a sudden Canada scored their first try off a mistake. So it's more the frustration that a lot of the tries that Canada scored were not, obviously Canada are an exceptional team, they're not number two in the world for nothing, but a lot of the tries, the vast majority are scored from Ireland's mistakes and Ireland's own errors. So where that stuff is, control the controllables, they will be frustrated with that. But ultimately be very happy with how they finished the second half out, because that's the finishing note that they're going to be heading off to a World Cup with. So they will be happier that they showed that they can mix it with a team of Canada's caliber when they get things ticking. But they have to, when you play a team like that, you have to have everything aligned and everything flowing in the right direction, and not allowing those little errors, because teams like Canada will punish you every time for those.
Yeah, I mean, rugby, like it starts with defense and then you can build on it. But in attack, when Ireland went forward, they actually showed a lot of patience and discipline. So they stayed calm when they knew they were on the front foot and they could see Canada were struggling. So there was good execution. There was a couple of ones that went astray, but Johnny, certainly Beveen took her first try exceptionally, really smart stuff. And the three tries in the second half, very well taken. Special mention for Anne McGann's second one, came in through the middle, came off her wing, a busy winger, which is something we like in this country.
Yeah, and McGann's try, the set piece play, the breakout maul, wasn't it? And in behind, and just showed a bit of strength and athleticism to get through the middle of two tackles. Like, and coaches will be very happy with that. You show how dangerous you can be from a set piece. And as well, if you can score from set piece like that, it's so efficient. Everyone else is a pep in their step. You know, the pack jog back, the out half will take a kick, or the kicker will take a kick, and everyone's in a good place because of it. Like, you know, so those kind of efficient tries are obviously nice, and they're rewarding for coaches too when you bring something in. But as Hannah said, like I think defensively in the first half, you know, Pelletier going through the middle of the ruck, like pillars not there, like really basic stuff. And then Simmons, who I thought was absolutely class, like she's a phenomenal player, but like, you know, some of the tackling midfield at the time you would be a little bit disappointed with, like Aoife Dalton and Enya were or a
Which
little
was
bit.
usually so reliable. The two of them,
Yeah.
you know,
That's the
their
thing.
stat.
But as coaches, you just kind of maybe sometimes you can paper over some of those things. You know, there's a bit of a disconnect or there's whatever else. So, like in the second half, I think they shored up a lot of those things. But they will be disappointed in themselves, like Hannah said. Like they are basic errors. There was times when there was contact put on and the tackle wasn't finished. But in the second half, like more to your point on attack, it looked quite cohesive. You know, there was sweet passes and another long pass, and they were getting into dangerous areas and they really challenged Canada. But like the big thing for me is that like Canada being second in the world and you played them in your last warm-up game. That's a complete cheat code. Like normally we don't see you playing the top teams in the world in a warm-up game, but I think you get that element of shock or anything like you'll come away from those games sometimes and you say we just respected them too much in the first half. Maybe there's an element of that. You won't respect them as much when you go into the second game if you do face them in the World Cup again or going into like the New Zealand game or a France game if it happens. You will just learn to deal with that kind of I wouldn't call it shock, but you know yourself, like we've all been in those games where you think, oh, I've wasted an opportunity because I just gave them too much respect, and hopefully that's out of the system there too.
Dan O'Brien had a mixed game. She landed a couple of conversions, some good kicks. Her loose kicking in the first half, you know, it put Ireland under a lot of pressure. And like at the end of the Six Nations, she missed a kick which cost Ireland in the Scotland match. Well, she just needed to kick it out. She went for touch again this time after Ireland had soaked up so much pressure. I think it was four penalties close in. Ireland won a penalty. She missed her kick to touch. What can You know, you expect her, she's 20 odd caps at this stage. You kind of expect her to do a bit better. What did you make of her performance, Hannah? Especially, you know, it's the basics that you really need to get right at an out half. The out half can lead the team around. Those mistakes prove so costly.
Yeah, they were costly mistakes, and they're ones obviously that get pinned back to her. I think we saw a noticeable shift in the second half of the change of tactics. So I don't know how much of it was off her own bad kicking and how much of it was, you know, tactically to kick them and probably put the pressure pin on them and turn Canada because it wasn't working. But I suppose, you know, she'll be a lot happier with how things ticked in the second half. It is an area that, you know, ultimately when you miss a John, even though when you miss a kick for touch, everything comes back to you in terms of where something originates from. Well, first try comes because Dana missed kicks for touch, never mind everything else that happens after it. But yeah, I think ultimately she'll be disappointed with that first half. And as Johnny said, it is a great experience to have to be able to play the likes of a Canada this close to a World Cup because you get that kind of feel for that test match intensity of what it's like and where you want to be. Ultimately, I don't think she'll be too phased. I know I said that last week. She's very, very chilled, laid back character, I suppose, is what you want ultimately. I think it's a position that I would only have her concern for is because obviously she has played the vast majority of minutes in that position. We've seen Enya Breen come in there a little bit. Nicole Fowley has obviously had a little bit of game time there. I know she's carrying a bit of a knock at the moment too, I think. So that would be my only concern is that if, you know, what's the plan B there? Obviously, you have someone like Enya who they've carried on the bench a lot of times as well to cover that, which is unfortunate for her because she ended up being that cover position. But yeah, that's I suppose something to look at, you know, going into it. And the over-reliance on Dana, you know, she's a fantastic player ultimately. And I mentioned last week her ability to kick us out of danger and the length that she has on her left boot is a serious weapon. But yeah, she won't be happy with that kind of first half of how things kind of went. But hopefully with the second half, she'll get a bit more confidence from that going forward.
Yeah, and Johnny, you know there's two out halves, out half on the front foot, out half on the back foot. When you're under that much severe pressure against a class team like Canada and your forwards are not providing that ball, what's the go-to thing for an out half on the back foot?
We actually had a lot of this discussion around the Lions as well. I think was it around Tom Lynagh when he was on the back foot in the first couple of tests, and it's how you kind of play your way out of that. It takes a lot of experience, and you know we would have said that Owen Farrell in that Australia team, when you're under that much pressure, would have found a kicking game to get you out of it. So it's just tactically being very aware of where you want to play or how much you want to play without getting rid of the ball. But like unfortunately for Dana, there was times where. I don't know, as Hannah says, I don't know what the strategy was in terms of their kick game, but maybe they just didn't adapt on the fly in the first half. And it took until they had a regroup at half time to kick a little bit better in the second half. But I think you could have gone to more contested. Like clearly, Canada were queuing up in the backfield and were still kicking the ball. Like she showed a lot of composure. She does look quite relaxed, and that left boot is a weapon. But even she got blocked down at one stage, just turned and played away, you know. So like she's very, very calm. And like I would have watched her. Around her kind of early caps and just taking notice because she's left-footed, and I was like, there's not too many of us exist. So I was And the depth of kick that she has, I think, you know, something that really kind of turned my head on how she plays. But I think being a bit more clever around how you manage that game, that's obviously collective. It comes through your scrum half and your out half, but also Stacey Flood at 15. You know, you've Enya at 12. You need to use those different kicking options. And Ireland have those options across the pitch, like having a left-footed out half. Again, having a left footer across any middle position is a bit of a cheat code, because you can always use that kind of wiper kick to the other side. Like, you can play the conditions anytime we're previewing a side and they've got a left-footed kicker around, you know, 12, 13, 15. It's very frustrating, because you know if there's a crosswind or for certain conditions, they'll just find an easier out. So like, Ireland have that across 9, 12, 9, 10, 12, 15. There's loads and loads of kicking options. So I think, I wrote about it a bit in the first half. I think if they could have gone to the air, they could have boxed them in a small bit and not allowed them transition so easily. So I think that's most of it. But I did hear Gareth Steenson talking quite a bit around the kicking skills, but he spoke a lot about kicking decision making. So again, there's probably a conversation within camp about how they're kicking, when they're kicking, and you can tell people how or when, but when the pressure comes on, you know, they just maybe have a look, panic, and swing a boot at it. And we've all been there. So I think tactically being aware of if the pressure is on, if you're not going forward, maybe it's just sticking the ball in the sky so you can rearrange your defensive line.
Yeah, and there is the new dynamic with the new rules, the 50-22. So, you know, theoretically, you should have more space to attack in front of you if defending teams are dropping back to cover that.
Yeah, but we just end up asking the backfield to do more, don't we? We don't actually put anyone else back there. So I don't think there's any more space. We're just asking the 15 the wings to do a bit more work. But actually, her first kick early on in the second half, it wasn't a 50-22, but it looked very like it was a nice little drill kick into the left-hand touchline. And I think Ireland got a bit more control after that, didn't they? So it was a nice moment.
Yeah, no, and the positives are that they got the 3 second-half tries, two tries for each of the wingers, which you really want to see them finishing off the moves. So, listen, there are positives to be taken for that game. And as he said after, it's not their World Cup final. Japan is the focus now, and they will that you expect a much more improved performance. So on Monday, Scott Beaman named a 32 woman squad for the tournament. I suppose the general fans would have been delighted to see Aoife Wafer's name there. We're not sure when she will become fit, but again, if Ireland have ambitions for quarter final or beyond, she's really a crucial part of that. Just we had Elena Perry, who was expected to come in after winning her try against Canada, or sorry, winning her cap against Canada. She's 11 caps for the Red Roses, and she's replacing Christy Haney, who's injured with a hamstring injury. Ivana Kiripati, who had just played the two warm-up games but had come through the Celtic Challenge, really. She had been in America. And then Nancy McGillivray, who's the Exeter centre, who has come in, won her cap against Scotland. They're probably the main talking points. But Hannah, maybe what stood out for you there in the squad selection? And then will you touch upon how parachuting a couple of two or three players in could affect a squad? I know they're all professionals now, and we just have to get the best of the World Cup, but overall, your impressions of the squad on how that affects the dynamic.
Yeah, I think obviously, you know, you mentioned their parachuting players in. I think you can kind of get the gist from the girls and from what you hear in the media and anybody doing interviews. They're very kind of, I don't know, from being in there, it's a very, you know, tight-knit group. Everybody gets along very well, and they spend a lot of time in each other's company. And it's kind of, you know, we've heard it in the past from Irish teams under Andy Farrell as well, of how cohesive they are as a group in terms of how they get along, and that makes a huge difference. So from that point of view of the new girls coming in, this was the trio you mentioned, I wouldn't be overly worried about that from a kind of cohesion in terms of, you know, knitting in with the group. And I know I heard Scott in the news mention, or in one of his pieces mentioned about, you know, everybody who has been in the group has brought something to the group and things like that. So he's a big believer of that too, in terms of the people bringing in. I suppose no massive surprises in terms of the backs. I think they kind of self-picked themselves. There hasn't been a lot of surprises. I suppose Nancy McGillivray being the only kind of new face in there compared to what we had seen. Obviously, there's a few, I suppose, of the younger girls within the back three setup, like who have seen over the last little while, like the Vicky Ans Kinlan and stuff like that, who'd be disappointed to miss out there. I think probably in the forwards, obviously Christy Haney is a big blow in terms of the scrum piece. I think we're not flush on props in Ireland in terms of the grassroots stuff, so definitely needs to be something to look at kind of going forward. But obviously seeing Elena Perry come in from that point of view is literally the experience piece, because it's such a key position, and good for Christy, who misses out, and scrummaging is her baby, and as I said, she brings a lot of stability there when she comes off, anytime that she's either started or come off the bench, so she'll be definitely missed. In the backs, I suppose, yeah, Ivana Kiripati is probably the bolter there in terms of her addition in there. In terms, as you said, like obviously only coming in for those, her first cap against Scotland and then featuring again against Canada. She's obviously been in the squad the last kind of number of years in terms of kind of extended squad and been in and around the group and training, and obviously has played a rugby kind of overseas with college in America and come home for the Celtic Challenge type things, and has played obviously a few inter-pro games as well with Connacht. But I suppose someone like Derv Nicovord is a big name that misses out, which I was surprised at myself, to be honest. Her versatility and what she's done both in a Munster jersey and in a club jersey for Belvo, and you know, for any time that she's gotten a chance to shine for Ireland, she is that kind of all action back row player. So yeah, it'd be good for her to miss out, and I suppose bringing someone with her experience there as well, you're also missing that out. She's fought her way back from an ACL injury as well to get herself back flying fit again. So yeah, good for the likes of her. There's always, I suppose, going to be one or two players who miss out in a 32-man squad as it is. So yeah, she'd probably be the biggest one that's missing out, that kind of who's, I suppose, not injured as such to miss the nod.
Yeah, Johnny, I was wondering if there was a comparison between Jean Klein coming into the Ireland Joe Smith squad in 2019 and like a very popular guy, Devin Toner, missing out, and how that would affect the dynamics. What's your take on that?
Yeah, it's funny because sometimes you do get a bit of chirping from people on the edge of squads, or someone's going to lose out and someone who might be on the edge or not getting a game. You can get a bit of chirping like that, but generally the players that are playing, you know, they're in a different positive headspace. Everyone wants someone to come in when they're not in their position. You know, that's the gist of it. And the stronger the squad can be, it helps the others to be better as well. So, like, I think everyone knows that it's a good thing. Unfortunately, when it's around your position or someone that you might be close with, that's where some of the chirping might start. But it's around, you know, management making sure that the transition has worked in the right way. And I think Scott has said something along those lines that, you know, they did it in the right way. And I think that's important. And also, I think it's on the people coming in then to have the right values and attitude, because that's what wins people over. It's not always their ability versus someone else's ability. If you add to the environment, if you buy into what the group are doing, it's a very easy transition. If you don't, you're going to be target number one. So, I was actually surprised when I saw the announcement. Not to compare, but there was a lot of positivity under the... I always look at the responses just to see what people think around the squad naming and everything else. There was just not too much... Not too much negativity around who loses out, but I think Hannah's right. Like there are girls who are going to be disappointed to lose out, and Derv Nicovord is one of the ones that I looked at straight away, because you're thinking how dynamic she can be, what she's done in a red jersey. You know, she seems like a player that can break up a game, and she's lost out. But then Ireland are so flush in that kind of back five area as well, and ball carriers and around the pack.
And I'll just also was noticeable there, Johnny, it was that when Ireland made some switches on last Saturday, Sam Monaghan was at flank at that stage, and Fiona Chute as well. So they have been kind of fleshing it out that these are options that can happen as well. So maybe that went against Derval on that occasion.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if Sam Monaghan was in that kind of hybrid role, you know, the second.
I saw her bedding down. I was looking for the number five jersey, or sorry, the jersey I'm sure I saw there at the weekend.
That's what I thought as well. And it's kind of aligning with that kind of Ty Byrne role, like, you know, that kind of second row six, which was interesting. But again, as you're saying, you can do that with a back five. Like, I know when I'm coaching, like, I'm not really worried about numbers on backs either at this stage with a back five. Like, it's certain roles and certain people adding to that group. So, you know, coaches pick it in a certain way that they think they're going to use certain players and who's next in. And, you know, it might not be like for like with the swap, but you know you get a balance right in that kind of back five. So, like...
Yeah.
Over that quite a bit, and unfortunately she might lose out because of that, but there's a lot of physical presence in Ireland's pack, and unfortunately she's one of the big ones, I think, to lose out.
Yeah, and Scott would have been similar to that, like when you're in there and you're like a second row or your back row, you're expected to be able to do both. So that could be a case where the height wise in terms of covering both, that they've gone the other way in terms of height wise or size wise, I don't know. But yeah, you feel good for her in that sense to lose out. But there's always, I suppose, someone who loses out in those situations. But you'd like to think that, like, because it's so close, obviously any injuries, I would imagine she's pretty close to next up kind of mentality with it. So
yeah, no, Scott said, you know, everyone's a dead leg away from getting a call up or, you know, being ruled out. So he's be ready was his message to the players who missed out. Aoife Wafer obviously included in it. There's kind of a narrative around Ireland just taking care of business against Spain, or sorry, Japan and Spain, which there's a bit more to it than that, obviously. And then getting Aoife fit to play New Zealand, it could be a pool decider. In the same way, you know, to say you have to think your way around a golf course, you have to think your way around a tournament as well. Would it make sense if Ireland had booked passage to a quarter final, and if Aoife Wafer was touch and go, not to play her against New Zealand, maybe not to give away too much, because if you play New Zealand, you beat New Zealand. If to go again against likely, well, that would be Italy then, more than likely. But is there, you have to kind of take in an overall view of how to approach Aoife and this tournament, and setting yourself up for, let's say, a likely quarterfinal against France.
Yeah, I think given poor Aoife and her injury record in terms of coming back from an injury and getting a different injury, or like some half the time with her injuries, they're not even a reoccurrence of what she's had before. It could be the other leg, or it could be something completely different. So she has been probably the most pox person in terms of injury. So yeah, there's that side of it too in terms of not risking her due to her injury profile. I don't think they'll be messing around with it if they don't need to. They won't be kind of risking that out the gates, but I think there's the same element to it. Like they won't be, I suppose, maybe that's a management thought process like down the line, but like you can't look past the first two games of the last thing you want to be doing is getting ahead of yourselves and thinking about, oh yeah, everybody's looking forward to New Zealand game, New Zealand, New Zealand. And you have the slight problem of having a Japan and Spain, you know, to get over. Yes, they mightn't be the same caliber, but a World Cup is a World Cup and anything can happen, and people are saving some tricks up their sleeves for that. So Japan and Spain are definitely the underdogs when it comes to those two fixtures. So they'll have nothing to lose. So definitely fear the underdog in that case. But yeah, with the wafer thing, they definitely won't be risking her, I don't think, if they don't need to. But at the same time, hopefully she'll truck along well. As I said, with her injury profile over the last, you know, since she's probably come into Ireland, you know, the things that she's achieved when she's been fit has been fantastic. But she's, as I said, been as unlucky as she has been fantastic on the pitch with injury. So hopefully things go to plan.
What's it like, Johnny, when you're preparing a team and you have to go flat out, we have to win this, but then the bigger picture coming into play of it's a bigger achievement to Ireland if they were to reach a semi-final than it would be, you know, maybe to beat New Zealand in a pool match. How does a coach approach that dynamic?
It's very hard, and I don't know. Does my own ego get in the way anyway? But I just don't like to lose a game, or you don't like to set yourself up for. Players feel it, like, you know, they'll figure you out in 10 minutes. You can't really hide much unless you say outwardly, "We're going to leave this one off now and go for France." And
No.
then you lose to France, and, like, you know, the heat comes on anyway. So I don't think you can say with any of these things you can't. Yeah, you might have some thoughts in the back of your mind, or if there's a real, you know, issue around Aoife Wafer, for example. Yeah, you might not risk her because you know there's more to come. It's not, hopefully at that stage, there won't be as much jeopardy. There'll still be another game, but, like, winning is a habit and the momentum matters, you know. So, like, I wouldn't be setting anyone up to not go full throttle against New Zealand. But as you're saying, like, and I've been guilty of it as well, because when you're previewing that tournament, you are saying, like, lower ranked teams, it's business, get over them, and let's get into the real thing. And all of a sudden you're similar to South Africa losing to Japan in the World Cup, whatever year that was, a couple of tournaments ago. So we certainly don't want to be in that boat. Unfortunately, you get no credit for beating Japan and Spain, but imagine the backlash if you lose. And as well, not the backlash, it's going to be it could be good night for your tournament. So I think that Hannah says, the cliche of one game at a time in this tournament, and just tick them off, business as usual, get past the next one. And then really kind of, so you might talk about peaking. You know, I think you take a stuttery performance against Japan or Spain and get through knowing that you've more to come, but you do really prefer to get a bit of momentum and a bit of flow. So, like, I think things kind of weigh in your mind as well, but you can start thinking longer term as a coach, but you've definitely not show that to players because they need to have the next game. We saw in the last Lions test, I think, you know, mindset wasn't right, I would think, and you see what damage it causes if you're. And it's not because you're 50% off, it's because you're literally a second slower to things, you know. So whether you're thinking longer term or not, you don't tell people that. You
Yeah,
start it off with the bag.
I think what'll help as well. Like I think we have that problem with, you know, we've seen the men's team go into the World Cups over the last number of cycles, and we all get ahead of ourselves back at home in like quarterfinal, quarterfinal, quarterfinal. Whereas with the women's team, it's different because we haven't been in a World Cup for a couple of cycles since we had it here at home, which didn't go to plan either. So it's been a long time. So these girls who are getting stepped onto that pitch will be taking every minute of it as, you know, as their World Cup final in terms of getting to play and getting to represent Ireland on a World Cup stage. So I think from that point of view, it's a bonus to it. I also think that we're lucky in the sense of where it's been held for a supporter's point of view that it's accessible, but it's also taken the likes of Japan and Spain perhaps out of their own backyards, and you take the humidity factor and the heat factor out of it, all of a sudden becomes a lot better playing field. And you know, same from experience of going over to Japan. They're a different outfit when you get to play them over there in their backyard when humidity is their friend. So I think those things will also play into Ireland's favour. But yeah, I think as Johnny said, like there's game up, next game up mentality. And as I said, the fact that it's the World Cup, they'll definitely be taking each game as it comes. I don't think we have to worry about from the inner circles of that and them getting complacent anyway.
Yeah, well, hopefully that's an omen. And when you mentioned the Japan South Africa match, that was, of course, in Brighton's home ground. So that's where Ireland's last pool game against New Zealand, or maybe that's a good omen. Can I just ask you about the tournament in general, and who you think might win this? Because it kind of reminds me of the build up to the men's 2011 World Cup, where New Zealand had been heavy favourites for 2003, 2007, and they got to their home patch and they squeezed over the line. Again, with England, it's really theirs to lose. They've been kind of head and shoulders above everyone, even for the last 4 or 8 years, without being able to get the job done in the final. Would anything but would you be shocked by anything but an England win, Hannah?
I wouldn't be shocked as such. Like, there's a hell of a lot of pressure on them. As you said, like, they should have won it the last time out and they didn't. New Zealand came up kind of, you know, not as underdogs for it at all, but just came in and took it off them. I think New Zealand obviously showed and did well under the home pressure of the expectations. I think there is a few teams like New Zealand who will revel coming over to England to try to take it off them in their own backyard. I think Canada can be thereabouts, such as their strength and depth and what they bring and what they offer around the park in terms of their backs and forwards power. All the pressure is going to be on England, no doubt about it. And that's, you know, their downfall over the last number of years has been that obviously the standard of matches that they play, that unfortunately Ireland are getting closer to closing that gap, but the best matches that they've had in terms of competitiveness, obviously, yes, they've had the WXB1 competition that they've had their opposition against, but in terms of Six Nations, you know, France are as close as a kind of a match that they can get in terms of a proper match. And even France over the last few years have probably not hit the heights of where they should have been or where they would expect to be. So yeah, all the pressure on England. On paper, they should be the ones that do it, such as the strength and depth that they have. But I would fancy, yeah, maybe an upset from New Zealand. New Zealand are going to come close. We could have another kind of England New Zealand final, but it'll be interesting.
Yeah. Who's your Euro going on, Johnny?
You can look past England, but I think when you look at, like, France had the same pressure in the Men's World Cup, and it just doesn't work out for you all the time. Now, I know they probably weren't odds on favourites to win it. Like, they were up there, but the
Yeah.
competition was really high. Like, when you look at the women's game, even the top rankings, like, there's a bit of a split and a divide. So I don't know. Like, that Canadian team were obviously quick out of the blocks against Ireland the last day. It's a warm-up game. You can't really tell too much from that. England have to be favourites, but you have to think that either New Zealand or Canada can catch them on a day. And other than that, it would really be a Greece in the Euros upset, wouldn't it? In the
Yeah.
soccer Euros, like, I don't see something like that happening. I think the pressure will build, but maybe England will get the job done.
Very good. I'm going to ask for how you think Ireland might fare in a moment. But first, I just want to touch on the Vodafone Women's Interpros started last weekend. Leinster beat Ulster 37-21. Emma Brogan scored a hat trick, a winger. Munster were too good for Connacht. They won 44-5. And Chisholm Aguero also got a hat trick there. Just a shout out for Ulster fullback Niamh Marley, almost scored a world-class try shoot from halfway. Just lost it on the line. I know Ireland are quite strong in the back three in the panel they have, but it's good to see the level below, if the Interpros is the level below where Scott Beaman can call to, that the wingers are getting good high level practice and in good form in the background.
Yeah, I think it's the season that a lot of the club players, you know, it's the year that a lot of them really, really enjoy, because players who may ordinarily have not got to put a chance to put their hand up on an interprovincial stage are getting the chance to come into those squads and shine and get that experience of playing at a higher level or like the step below international. So yeah, it's great to see, as you said, mentioned a few names there in terms of the talent coming through. And like that's what this year is all about in terms of, you know, the international World Cup taking the girls away. That's what it's about. It's about giving other people a chance to put their hand up. and seeing what's out there. And yeah, ultimately, you've a few as well. It's interesting. We saw Kathy Baker starting at 13 for Leinster as well. Obviously, it's been a while since she's been in a 15s jersey, predominantly sevens. She's actually a club mate of mine at Blackrock, but has been involved heavily with sevens over the last number of years. So I think you'll see that trickle through as well throughout all the squads of the set. A few of the sevens girls been, you know, been kind of integrated back into that. But sorry, just disappeared off screen
No,
there.
no, no.
But yeah, it's that kind of time for other people to shine. So as you said, I think it could be a really good match this weekend between Leinster and Munster. Munster are obviously kind of a more of established outfit. They have a lot of the players that they've had kind of regularly over the last number of seasons with UL. They haven't lost as many. They kind of have that back line is kind of is settled as well. So I'd say money might be on them for this weekend, but it's always like a little warm up for possibly a final against Leinster again. So it'll be interesting. And Ulster have been coming good. You mentioned there, Niamh Marley's another one who's back from injury. She'll be delighted to be back on the pitch after a long stint out with knee injuries. But I think they could give Connacht a good run for their money this weekend based on how they played and how they showed up on Sunday last.
Yeah, and they'll take centre stage here in Ireland anyway. So it's Leinster against Munster at Energia Stadium, 2:30 kickoff. Connacht v Ulster at the Dexcom, 4:15. That's on Saturday. Those games. There's also the Rugby Championship as well. Will kick off this weekend. It's Australia against South Africa, South Africa against Australia, and Argentina against the All Blacks. We might just wrap up with how you think Ireland will go in this World Cup. Just where do you see us finishing off, Hannah?
Yeah, I think ultimately it's get safely out of the group. And then after that, I think anything can happen. It's knockout rugby. So I think Ireland, if they come out of the group stages, they'll be very much in underdog carried territory and they'll love that. So yeah, they'll ride the wave then. Hopefully, yeah, I'd hopefully like to think that we can get towards the semi-final if things go our way early doors. And as Johnny said, momentum, get momentum, build the momentum, keep going. You'll have a massive crowd behind them in every game on the ground there. So yeah, hopefully that'll work to our advantage as well. And hopefully we can, generally speaking, keep a relatively clean bill of health injury-wise in those key positions that we mentioned already. So hopefully, I'm gonna say semi-finals.
Johnny.
Yeah, look, obviously Hannah has a bit more knowledge and experience of the whole thing than I do, but like even beating New Zealand last year, last autumn, I think is just going to come back to haunt them a small bit, possibly. You know, there you can get, and maybe they'll do what the men's team did and just make it a habit. You know, so I'm not ruling that out. But if I was to guess based on form and everything else, and I think there's something big coming from that Irish team. I genuinely have this kind of feeling that it's going to come in under the radar. People don't know what's going on in the background, all the work that's been done in Ireland. Maybe they won't see that internationally. The reason I'm saying about the New Zealand game is because maybe there's just a bit of a response from New Zealand in that, and Ireland will go into a quarter final against France. But that's the one where I think maybe there's something coming here from Ireland, and there should be a big win for Ireland, whether it's the New Zealand game or the France game. I just have a feeling they will do that. How far they'll go after that, I don't know. But I think if they can get into a really competitive quarter final, have a proper crack at it, that's the one I'd be watching them. And I think there could be a win there for them.
Listen, that's a good positive note to end on. Hopefully, that's what we see, and let's hope everyone gets behind them. Hannah and Johnny, thanks very much for your time on the RT Rugby podcast, and we'll check in again and do it all again next week.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks, lads. Appreciate it.